Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Good afternoon. Since I became Attorney General, I have made clear that the Department of Justice will speak through its court filings and its work. Just now, the Justice Department has filed a motion in the Southern District of Florida to unseal a search warrant and property receipt relating to a court-approved search that the FBI conducted earlier this week. That search was of premises located in Florida belonging to the former president. The department did not make any public statements on the day of the search. The former president publicly confirmed the search that evening, as is his right. Copies of both the warrant and the FBI property receipt were provided on the day of the search to the former president's counsel, who was on site during the search. The search warrant was authorized by a federal court upon the required finding of probable cause. The property receipt is a document that federal law requires law enforcement agents to leave with the property owner. The department filed the motion to make public the warrant and receipt in light of the former president's public confirmation of the search, the surrounding circumstances, and the substantial public interest in this matter. Faithful adherence to the rule of law is the bedrock principle of the Justice Department and of our democracy. Upholding the rule of law means applying the law evenly, without fear or favor. Under my watch, that is precisely what the Justice Department is doing. All Americans are entitled to the even-handed application of the law, to due process of the law, and to the presumption of innocence. Much of our work is by necessity conducted out of the public eye. We do that to protect the constitutional rights of all Americans and to protect the integrity of our investigations. Federal law, long-standing department rules, and our ethical obligations prevent me from providing further details as to the basis of the search at this time. There are, however, certain points I want you to know. First, I personally approved the decision to seek a search warrant in this matter. Second, the department does not take such a decision lightly. Where possible, it is standard practice to seek less intrusive means as an alternative to a search and to narrowly scope any search that is undertaken. Third, let me address recent unfounded attacks on the professionalism of the FBI and Justice Department agents and prosecutors. I will not stand by silently when their integrity is unfairly attacked. The men and women of the FBI and the Justice Department are dedicated, patriotic public servants. Every day, they protect the American people from violent crime, terrorism, and other threats to their safety while safeguarding our civil rights. They do so at great personal sacrifice and risk to themselves. I am honored to work alongside them. This is all I can say right now. More information will be made available in the appropriate way and at the appropriate time. Thank you.
All right. Good job, Chris. That is Merrick Garland, Attorney General of the United States. A very rare and unusual situation in our country right now, the Attorney General coming before the public because he's under siege from the right. All right. Just think about this for a moment, ladies. He's under siege from the right. With accusations that they've gone too far. My whole life, and I'm an old guy, I'm an old baby boomer, okay, my whole life, if there's been accusations of prosecutorial overreach, of the Justice Department going too far, of the FBI going too far, it's coming from the left. I've lived through so many moments. And by the way, hearings about how the FBI spied on Martin Luther King, how the FBI engineered a raid on the in the apartment on the West Side that killed Fred Hampton and Mark Clark while they were sleeping. It was an operative of the FBI who fed them a drug. I'm relating this as history that I have lived through. And in each of those moments, it was activists and lawyers on the left who were challenging the motives, the unconstitutional behavior of the FBI. It's people on the left challenging and people on the right falling in line to defend them and saying, how dare you? Oh my God, think about the Chicago 8 trial, Chicago 7 trial. This is ancient history to you millennials, I understand. But this goes up all throughout my life, into the 80s and the 90s. It's always been like the FBI, the Justice Department, they're like extensions of the police when it comes to the right. Now, all of a sudden, because Donald Trump is the target of their investigation, a man of the right who has come to symbolize the right, who's the leader of the right, who's actually branded the right. It's no longer the right. It's MAGA, a name that he came up with. It's his name. I say it all the time because Donnie Trump said it. He goes, MAGA, he speaks of MAGA like it's a living being. MAGA likes you. MAGA's nice. MAGA likes me. So he's rebranded the right. He's taken over the right. And so the FBI's going after him. Got accusations that he's hoarding documents. He took documents from the White House that he shouldn't have taken. Who knows what's in those documents? Last night, the Washington Post broke a story. It could be nuclear secrets. Who knows? It was like nuclear records having to do with bombs. If bad people get it, they could build a bomb. You know, they're putting all this information. And I noticed that the New York Times did not pick that story up, by the way, yet. It's still the Washington Post sort of hanging out there. And anyway, the point is, now it's the right. It sounds like Abby Hoffman and the left. They've gone too far. They're manufacturing evidence. You can't trust them. You know, we have to stand up for our sacred liberties. We will fight this all the way. We believe you. I don't even know what's in there. This is a grifter, by the way. This is what's so weird about it. There is nothing in Donald Trump's background, his past, that would lead you to believe he would tell the truth about something. Nothing. His whole history, his reputation is built on what? Like, let's say it's a business deal. He says, I'm going to sell you this building for $100. And all of a sudden, you think you got a deal. He goes, I think I'll sell it to you for $50. That's his whole history. Backing away from agreements, not paying his bills. Okay. You know, kind of making stuff up as he goes along. He jokes about it. He laughs about it. And somehow or other, we're supposed to trust him. That's what the right, MAGA, falling in line. And now there. And it's even weird. Donald Trump's picking this stuff up. It's like up is down and down is up. Donald Trump came out of a deposition in New York the other day. There's a picture of it. And he had his fist in the air. I'm like, oh, my God. So what are you, Angela Davis? Yeah, you have to look that one up, millennials who see that. The point is a radical from the past. That's what radicals used to do. They used to put their fists in the air. Now right-wingers, MAGA has got their fists in the air. They want to be so bad, like Abby Hoffman or Jerry Rubin. Up is down is up. And that was Merrick Garland, Attorney General, from Lincolnwood in suburban Chicago. If it's a Chicago-based podcast, got to point out there's a Chicago connection. So this matters to you people. Went to Niles West High School. Should be on the Supreme Court. He was Barack Obama's nominee to be on the Supreme Court. Mitch McConnell blocked it. So you could say, some guy on the right would say, oh, this is just his getting vengeance. Well, if that's the case, he'd be raiding Mitch McConnell's apartment or house, not Donnie Trump. Trump wasn't the president or in the Senate or anything when his nomination was blocked. But this is a fascinating. We're going to be following this one for a long, long time because here's the deal. It's like a game. It's a bluff. So Donald Trump was the one who called attention to the raid. The raid happened Monday night. They're looking for documents, allegedly, supposedly. I don't know. They haven't come right out and said exactly what they're looking for. And they're looking for documents, presumably, that Trump took from the White House that didn't belong to him. They've been negotiating with him for a long time to bring him back. And he's been stonewalling and stalling. Oh, there you go. Come on, right? Admit that that's what Donald Trump does. Stonewalls. That's his thing. Like he doesn't pay a bill. And so sooner or later, the contractor who did the service has to come to him and go, okay, I'll reduce my fee. That's how he negotiates. So, you know, that's how he's dealing with the government. Government says, you have these documents. He goes, no, I'm not giving them to you. Like, it's just a standard operating procedure. I'm not going to give them to you. So it's been months back and forth, lawyers talking to other lawyers. And finally, the feds say, all right, we're going in. We're just going to take it. And then Donald Trump says, this is an unwarranted intrusion into my sacred home. And MAGA goes berserk. They're up in airs. This is an unwarranted intrusion. Whatever he says, they follow. Hilarious. They're all Abby Hoffman now. Could have used you guys back in 1970, 69, when they when the feds were mounting a non-existent case against Abby Hoffman and Jerry. Just saying, could have used you in 1969 when the feds raided Fred Hampton's apartment on the West Side. You were nowhere to be found. Freaking worthless when we need you, and now you're standing up for this grifter. Anyway, I'm with you on this point. I want to know. I have a curiosity. I never really buy the arguments that these are state secrets. They got to conceal them from. No. I want to know. I'm like the original Let in the Light guy. So I want to know what they were looking for. I want to know what they found. So what Merrick Garland did was he goes, okay, Donnie, if you give us permission, we'll release the official warrant that we used to justify going into your Mar-a-Lago home. Now it's up to Donald Trump. See, now he has to decide, well, do I really want to do that? Because, you know, there may be some information on there that shows I'm up to no good. And the real deal is that the warrant itself is not the go-to document. The go-to document is the affidavit that justified the warrant. That's the kind of stuff that, like, there was the affidavit that justified, what was it, taping Ed Burke. And that affidavit, which I think was FBI put it together, it was Justice Department attorney or an FBI attorney. I don't know which one it was or what the FBI is with the Justice Department. It doesn't matter who did it. The point is they released it to, like, selectively. I think the Sun-Times got it. And I think the Sun-Times was the only outlet that had it. This is how it works. They selectively released it to the Sun-Times, and the Sun-Times would report bits and pieces. And that's how we knew. It's not like they released it so that the public could know, so that you'd be smart and wise about what you're... No. They selectively... So I know games are played. I know games are played. Absolutely. But I just... I got to get a kick out of it, man. I just... Cracks me up. Merrick Garland's being all Dudley Do-Right. I stand up for law enforcement everywhere. He's the Democrat. And meanwhile, the Republicans are out there. It's unjust. They've gone too far. Tyranny. I'll end where I began. Hey, Republicans. Hey, MAGA. You were absolutely worthless when we needed you. Yeah, I know I'm a younger MAGA. I wasn't even born yet, Ben. Well, your worthless parents were worthless, okay? You come from a long line of worthlessness. Now you suddenly discover the concept of liberty, government overreach, after it's been used on, like, anybody that resembles me, a lefty. Well, I guess better late than never, but you guys, come on. You make a mockery out of justice.
Speaking of better late than never, this episode of The Ben Jarofsky Show is brought to you in part by SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana, the Chicago Federation of Labor, the Chicago Teachers Union, and Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for all the things there is to know in the city of Chicago, where to go, what to do, what to eat, what to drink, and every now and again, what kind of pots you can smoke. Hey, we might talk about that later. More, including columns from our very own Benny J, all available right there, ChicagoReader.com. Ooh, hitting my mic there, but it's all good. August 12, 2022, it's The Ben Jarofsky Show. And oh, what a week it's been. We've seen things and heard things that we haven't seen or heard before. Ben's going to get into all that stuff right now. Benny, take it away.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Old Days Friday, and here's why. Yes, indeed, that voice again. Chris Jarofsky sitting in for Dr. D, a much-deserved vacation for the doctor. And Chris will be leading me through the paces here on Oh, What a Week. Before we get started, though, I'm calling it Old Days Friday. I'll tell you why. And this just popped into my brain when we turned on our computer when I connected with Chris. So I could see him. He can see me. None of you can see us because we're audio only. Somehow the Ben Jarofsky Show hasn't figured out how to do video as well as audio. We're working on it. All right. We have a team of millennial like techie guys in a back room working on it. Everybody else has figured it out, but I haven't figured it out yet. Chris, as we've said a couple times on the show, used to work at WCPT, as did I. Chris left WCPT under better circumstances than I did. That's okay. Everybody did. But anyway, neither here nor there. He was in charge of promotions when I was there, and he put together a poster to promote my show, The Ben Jarofsky Show. And I hadn't seen this poster, ladies and gentlemen, 4 years. It's a picture of a Corona typewriter. The only letters on the typewriter are the T, the H, the E, the B, the E, the N, and to spell out The Ben Jarofsky Show, et cetera, and so forth. And I thought it was pretty clever. You know, when I saw it, I was like, oh, man, Chris, that's really, I remember when you did it, I'm like, oh, that's, oh, man, everybody else was like, oh, I don't get it. Nobody knows what a keyboard is, Chris, I know.
If you're in Chicago and you know political news, you know that Ben Jarofsky's been a writer for years. I mean, you've interviewed some of the, I mean, and you go at toe-to-toe with some of the crooked, I mean, I almost feel like you're the MJ of political, like, interviews, because you cross over these guys.
Well, if I'm the crossover guy, I'd be more like Allen Iverson. He had a great crossover, or Kyrie Irving. So the point was, I had been, as Chris was saying, been doing it, writing columns for years in the newspaper game for years. So let's link this guy to his newspaper past. Let's put a typewriter up. And when they put me on radio, it was like linking his newspaper past to his radio podcasting future. And only two people, I think, liked it. Chris and me.
Yeah. Nobody else got it.
Nobody else got it or cared about it. Anyway, so old days, I saw that that poster, and it's just like, brought back memories. All right, without further ado about the poster, I'm going to turn things over to Chris. He's going to take the Dennis role as we go through a week's worth of news. Take it away, Chris.
Okay, let's find out what happened this week in the political realm. In national news, the national news actually was the biggest news of the week. I mean, we heard in the intro Merrick Garland kind of giving a little bit of info that will be released soon on what was in this search warrant for Trump's house. In the local news, we find out that the Illinois GOP has proved they haven't lost their tickets to the Trump train. They have released a statement criticizing Attorney General Merrick Garland, calling his actions since the Trump raid as an unprecedented breach of tradition. Ben, these guys really just, they're hooked. They're like leeches to Trump. I mean, it seems like they really don't have any other way to survive other than just feeding off of Trump. Right. Yeah. I mean, is that a true statement, you think?
Absolutely. All right. So that statement you just read, that came from the Illinois Republican Party. Is that correct? Was that your OK?
Yes. Actually, that statement came from Illinois GOP Chairman Don Tracy.
Don Tracy. OK, so here's the deal. Here's the deal for Republicans in the state of Illinois. As I've said many times and written many times, the Republican Party has been taken over by MAGA. MAGA controls the Republican Party. MAGA is very, very obviously popular in areas where heavy concentration of Republican voters does, like Alabama, Texas, Mississippi. That's where MAGA will be strongest. MAGA will not be strongest statewide in Illinois. Illinois has huge pockets that are blue or purple. And Donald Trump is not really popular, even in purple areas. They're not really popular. It's almost like, can we just get rid of this guy? You know what I mean? I mean, so somebody who is well-to-do and lives in the suburbs and may love the tax break that the Republicans passed on to him back in 2017. They just find Donald Trump unseemly, or maybe they're for abortion rights, et cetera, and so forth. He's not really popular, obviously. So what's MAGA to do in the state of Illinois? What's the Republican Party to do in the state of Illinois? The Republican Party's challenge in a state like Illinois, like a state like Maryland, like a state like Boston, is to come up with a candidate, a leader who is moderate enough to bring over swing voters, to bring over moderate Democrats, independents, people who are for abortion rights, that kind of thing. And there's tons of them here in the state of Illinois. You could get elected governor as a Republican in the state of Illinois by winning over swing voters. We've seen it happen. 2014, Bruce Rauner was elected largely because A, he had a lot of money, that helped. B, he exploited divisions in the Democratic Party, that helped. Patrick Quinn, the governor at the time, was not exceedingly popular. But three, most important, in my humble opinion, he absolutely assured voters that he was pro-choice. He had his wife go out and make statements to that effect. And the two of them, Bruce Rauner and Diana Rauner, had given money to Planned Parenthood. So they had made contributions to abortion rights groups. So they had validation in this area. And he was victorious. Before him, my God, we had Jim Edgar. We had Jim Thompson for years and years and years vetoing anti-abortion legislation coming out of Springfield. That's legislation that was passed, ladies and gentlemen, to a large degree with Democratic votes. Just think about this. And would come before a Republican governor, and he vetoed it. Just think about where Illinois was in the 80s and the 90s with the Republican Party. That hasn't changed. The basic equation has not changed. If you're a Republican and you want to get elected statewide, you have to more or less be a moderate. And I know things have moved to the right, even with moderates. They're moderates today are not where they were, let's say, in the 80s or even the early 90s. But it's still more to the left than where Trump is. But no. So intense are the MAGA forces that control the Republican Party, that they have determined that they cannot deviate in any way from the most extreme wing, which is the party. And so here in Illinois, Illinois Republicans cannot like have more of a neutral attitude about the raid at Donald Trump. Even Illinois Republicans feel compelled to go along and trash the FBI and trash Merrick Garland. And this is different, folks. I could tell you it goes back. Like, there is a tradition among Illinois Republicans working closely with Democrats. I'm going to go way back. There was a senator named Dirksen before any of you were born. A very powerful and popular senator, Republican senator out of Illinois. Close friend, close ally of both John F. Kennedy and LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, Lyndon Baines Johnson. In fact, there's recordings. LBJ was making secret recordings of phone conversations he had when he was the president in the White House. And there's some classic recordings, which I urge you, if you're really a geek and a junkie and you really love your history, go back and listen to Dirksen working in conjunction with LBJ. LBJ making, speaking very candidly to Dirksen about his attitude about Richard Nixon, revealing things that in total confidence to this Republican. This is the tradition of Republican politics. But now, open window, throw out. Don Tracy is total MAGA. And listen, I don't know how it works. We have not elected a MAGA man or woman statewide yet. Donald Trump, I forget what he got in Illinois, 42% of the vote, something like that. Pretty much a trouncing, you know. I can't think of any, I'm doing this off the top of my head, I can't think of any Trumpster who's been elected statewide. Oh, I know, if you gerrymander a district, a Trumpster will win as Congress or state rep or state Senate. And if the party has turned itself over to MAGA, then they'll nominate a statewide candidate like Darren Bailey, who bows down to Donald Trump. But to win in a general election statewide, that's why Kent Griffin, was pouring money into Richard Irvin. Because he assessed the landscape and said, oh, there's no way a MAGA man will win statewide. I need to protect myself from escalating income taxes. And I can't stand J.B. Pritzker anyway. So I'm going to put my money on a quote-unquote moderate, Richard Irvin, who's basically a Democrat. Although he somehow or other was transforming himself into Republican. He got crushed. And what did Kenny G do? He left the state, went to Florida, where now he's best pals with Ron DeSantis, because he knows you can elect a MAGA man statewide in Florida. You can't elect one in Illinois. So, Chris, when I hear that comment, I just shake my head. You know, I had wanted Richard Irvin to take a stand against Donald Trump. particularly take a stand against him on the January 6th insurrection. I thought that that would have been more in line with who he was and more consistent with the public career he had before he decided to run in the primary. He didn't see it that way. He obviously, his advisor said, don't even, the best way to deal with Trump is to pretend he doesn't exist. And so this is the Republican, this is their strategy for a statewide candidate. Just pretend the loudest man in the room that everyone's paying attention to doesn't exist. So that's Republican Party in the state of Illinois. Had Urban run an anti-Trump sort of Adam Kinzinger, Liz Cheney campaign, I don't know if he would have won. He would have been truer to who he was. He would have had more credibility. He probably would have finished higher than third in the race because nobody bought his act. But there's nobody in the state of Illinois willing to play the role of the moderate. So there we go. Falling in line once again, the Illinois Republican Party.
There we go. And one other member of the Illinois Republican Party who's kind of gone back and forth on the on an issue. Let's see if you can grab this piece of audio. You know who he is. He's going back and forth. He's got...
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can't hear it.
That
but
is correct.
Did you...
That is correct.
That is correct. That's Darren Bailey.
It was really hard to find this audio. I had to find audio of Darren Bailey. He's been going back and forth since, 2017 on his statements about abortion and the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And now he's doing it again. So this week he has basically, he's gone out publicly in an interview with Mark Harrington from WSPY and basically said the Jewish community agrees with him.
Oh, my God.
He says the Jewish community has told him that he is right. He's been on both sides of it. He's tried to apologize for his statements, but then he's like, no, I'm not wrong. I was completely right. Here's other people to back me up. And look, they're in the Jewish community.
Yeah.
He doesn't really have a lot of facts to back that up. No one has fact-checked and gotten the source who supposedly agrees with him, but he's still touting that.
All right. By the way, when you open the back, I couldn't hear it for some reason, but it's funny because the Dennis has this a bit where another gubernatorial candidate is going back and forth, Gary Rabin playing ping pong. So well, first I thought, did you uncover that Gary Rabin ping pong? Is that what it was? And then I heard that is correct. And I go, oh, there's Darren Bailey.
I don't want to cut you off too much, but I do have to cut in. That is actually the great Gregory Hines tap dancing. I couldn't find the actual audio of Darren Bailey, so I had to get the next best thing. It's actually a better thing if you ask me.
Yeah, Gregory Hines, may rest in peace, one of the great dancers of all time. All right, so let me break this down a little bit. We've talked a lot about this on the show. I wrote a column about it this week. And Darren Bailey. Okay, so this is an example of what I'm talking about, of where the Republican Party in the state of Illinois is right now. And as I said, no Republican has ever been won statewide office, as far as I can recall, being extremely anti-abortion in the state of Illinois. So if you're going to win, it's sort of a rule of thumb. If you're going to win statewide as a Republican, you have to be pro-choice. They'll allow you to be anti-union, as they were with Bruce Rauner. They'll allow you to be sort of conservative on pocketbook issues. Jim Thompson was sort of conservative on pocketbook issues, more or less. And not really Jim Thompson. Really hasn't been a candidate that got elected statewide that was really tight-fisted, except for Bruce Rauner. But you have to be pro-choice. Not only is Darren Bailey not pro-choice, he's an extremist. He believes that a fertilized egg is every bit as much as a human being as somebody walking around in the world. Somebody out of the womb, into the world, you know, existing, so you could see them. And so as such, if you have this point of view, this absolute point of view, then it's murder. Abortion is murder. That's in his mind. It's fixed. And so what they do, people who have this point of view, they just tally up the number of abortions there have been since Roe was enacted in 1973, and then says that total number is more than pick an example of genocide, Holocaust, you know, Rwanda, Cambodia. I don't know if MAGA knows about these other things, but any instance of genocide that has existed in the world. You could just pick that and you can say, well, abortion is worse because more people were killed. As though, again, a decision by a woman and her doctor as to whether to have a child when the child is in embryonic form is somehow akin to Nazi soldiers just mowing down people, just lining them up in front of a ditch and mowing them down. That's how twisted and weird the point of view is, in my humble opinion. And that's Darren Bailey's position. So when he was running in 2017, let's just take you back in time, ladies and gentlemen, to this. 2017, Darren Bailey was running at an incumbent state rep from the right. It was Republican, an incumbent Republican in a downstate district. And Bailey was coming at him from the right. And to defeat that incumbent, he had to out-MAGA him. He had to be more extreme than that incumbent. And so he gave a Facebook speech to his followers in which he said that the abortions that have occurred in our country since Roe are more awful, more abhorrent than the attempted extermination of the Jews in World War II. He said that. He said that in 2017. About 2 weeks ago, that bit was unearthed by a reporter for the Forward magazine put out there. And it's an awful statement. It's intolerant. It's dismissive of the people who were slaughtered by the Nazis. It turns them into what? It weaponizes their death into some kind of talking point. Some absurdist talking point, I might add. It trivializes them and marginalizes them. And it kind of, and this is the part that really gets lost. It's sort of like, I don't know, it's deflects from the crimes of the Nazis. I'm saying they're not that bad. And you got to remember, in 2017, that's when Nazis were walking through Charlottesville, Virginia, chanting Jews will not replace us. I'm having flashbacks when I see that sign of my old show on CPT. We were talking about that in 2017. That's a very scary moment. And Donald Trump was like, he didn't want to come down hard on the Nazis. Because, look, I'm not saying that all MAGA people are Nazis. But let's be honest, folks. All Nazis vote MAGA. We all know that. So if he trashes the Nazis, he's like trashing a part of his coalition. He didn't want to do that. And so Bailey made his comments, his Facebook comments, right about 3 months after Charlottesville. I think he was sending out another message that he was maggier than the other guy in the race. You know, I see a connection between one and the other. I see it a lot with Republican rhetoric. After Buffalo, 10 people shot in Buffalo, 10 black people shot in a grocery store by a white supremacist. And I've talked about this in the show. A woman running for Congress in Florida tweeted out, well, the sniper still hasn't killed as many black people as Planned Parenthood. Whoa! It's like a cousin of the Darren Bailey remark. It's like reducing and minimizing, trivializing the death and the lives of the people who were killed. So I see what he's going. So again, he could probably get away with it in Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, Texas, Indiana, maybe Ohio, but it's Illinois. He's running in a state that is pro-Democrat by and large. So he has to talk it back, but he can't do it 100%. Chris, you're absolutely correct. Out of nowhere, after he came up with his initial, which was a sort of apology, he started backtracking on the apology and said that there were some members of the Jewish community who told them they agreed with him. And they're like, I think it was like Trump with his imaginary police friend. I don't know if you know, remember this one. But back in 2016, when Donald Trump was running for president, he did a campaign appearance in Illinois. Maybe it was a fundraiser in Chicago. And he made this comment that he had talked to a police officer, a high-ranking police officer or a police official with Chicago, who said he cleaned up crime in Chicago in 3 days. He had a plan. He could do it in 3 days. And he could just, boom, snap his finger. I've been waiting ever since for the plan to be implemented. Well, we know why it wasn't implemented, because he made the whole thing up, Donald Trump. I don't think he talked to any police officer. He had a little imaginary police officer friend. So apparently Darren Bailey has an imaginary Jewish friend who tells him things like, you're a wonderful human being. You're not anti-Semitic at all. Every Jewish person in the state of Illinois agrees with you. It's like this little fantasy figure. Maybe it could be like a sock doll that he puts on his hand and then talks into his ear. I love you, Darren Bailey. I'm Jewish. Some weird stuff, ladies and gentlemen. This guy is the Republican nominee in the state of Illinois. Republicans, you freaking lost your mind. So, yeah, it's like he dug himself a hole, Chris, and he keeps digging. And I don't know how the hell he expects to get out of this.
We'll keep going with some more news here. We got a new candidate here in the Chicago race for mayor in 2023. Just announced Sophia King, 4th Ward Alderman. She's throwing her crown in there because, you know, she's the king. So, king's crown. I don't know. Bad joke. Dennis does better. Entering the race and the platform to fix the violence in the city of Chicago. She wants us to find better solutions together as a city. Ben, this race is getting pretty crowded. Do you think she's got a chance? Are you in Sophia's corner? What's your take on this?
Well, I'm making no endorsements in the mayoral race yet. I got to see who. I'm probably not going to make any endorsements anyway. I don't even know if I'm allowed to make endorsements. I may confess as to who I voted for. I'm not always the person to follow when it comes to voting in mayoral elections. I confess. In the last election, 2019, I voted for Lori Lightfoot. Oops. All my lefty friends have been making fun of me ever since. I believe whatever she told me.
Well, maybe trying to let the light in.
Sophia King. Your first question, does she have a chance? Yes. I'll tell you why I think she has a chance. I've said this many times. I'll keep saying it. This is a race to see who finishes second to Lori Lightfoot. And so you got to finish second to Lori Lightfoot. In my humble opinion, Lori Lightfoot will be the top vote getter in the first round of the mayoral election, which takes place, March of 2023. And but I don't think Lori Lightfoot will get over 50% of the vote. So you got to get over 50% of the vote in that first round, or there's a runoff between the two top vote getters. So that's just the basic 101 that you have to understand. So all these people that are running are looking to come in second to Lori Lightfoot. And then they want to consolidate once they're done with that initial race. They want to consolidate all the opposition vote behind them, so they can get the 50% they need to defeat Lori Lightfoot. So I think Sophia King, if you consider she comes from Hyde Park area, Kenwood area, very close to the Obamas, her husband is a prominent attorney downtown, Alan King, very prominent attorney. She has the support, at least tacitly, I think, of Tony Preckwinkle, who is the 4th Ward committee woman and the chair of the Democratic Party, and who ran against Lori. And last time around, got clobbered by Lori Lightfoot. So I think she has her tacit support, at least. I don't know if Tony will come out for it publicly. We'll see. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what you need. If there's like 20 people running, does it take 15% to finish second? I'm not sure. But I think Sophia King could get 15%. I think she'll be able to raise money thanks to her husband and his connections and her connections to Obama. And so then let's say she is in the runoff against Lori Lightfoot. She has a path to victory because she could consolidate the opposition. I do not think a Paul Vallis. I do not think a person coming at Lori Lightfoot from the right, like Willie Wilson, has an opportunity because they're not going to consolidate like all the other forces in the Chicago political. Lefties aren't going to vote for Paul Vallis. There's a lot of lefties in the city of Chicago. So they either sit out the election or they'll be so disgusted with a right-wing candidate, they'll vote for Lori Lightfoot. But Sophia King has the potential. That's just my gut-level feeling up front when she announced, she's got a lane, as they said. So they always go, all the consultants go, do they have a lane to victory, Ben? Do they have a lane to victory? So I do believe she has a lane. Whether she can get there, I do not know. So much is going to happen between now and then. There's so many variables out there, but I could see why she would want to do it. I could see why she thinks she can do it. And she kind of reminds me of Lori Lightfoot back in 2019. Nobody knew who the hell Lori Lightfoot was. Nobody knew, you know, she was a blank slate. And so she would come before anybody and pretty much tell them whatever they wanted to hear, and they would fill it in. I remember Lori Lightfoot coming to the old studio for interviews many times. I remember walking in a parade. I have a picture with Dr. D standing with Lori Lightfoot. And he's so tall. Dennis, I don't know if you guys have ever seen Dennis, but Dennis is about 6'2". Lori Lightfoot, of course, as we know, is not that tall. So he's towering over Lori Lightfoot. Candidate Lori Lightfoot. And it was in Sue Sadlowski Gardens' Labor Day Parade of 2019. No, not 2019. Excuse me. Was it 2017? No, 2018. By the time comes by, I can't keep track. So and nobody knew who Lori Lightfoot was back then. Now everybody knows who she is. So, you know, kind of reminds me, coming out of nowhere, she's got a core group of supporters who know who she is. So her job, if she's serious and she's committed, will be just to get out beyond that core just enough, Chris, to pick up enough votes to finish second.
All right. Incumbency definitely has its benefits for Lori, but I'm anxious to see how it turns out. So I'm going to keep watching that. But here we go, Ben. I'm going to give you a little musical quiz. It's going to be real quick here. Just tell me if you know this song, if you know this artist, name that tune.
Yeah, it's still alive, hey. Smoking on the Jeep and got me tweaking.
Do you know who that is, Ben? I'll give you a hint. They're from Chicago.
He's from Chicago?
He is from Chicago. He's actually, I'll get into that in a little bit.
His initials VM?
They are. A little surprised that you know that. Okay, tell him who it is then, since you know, Ben.
So that's a rapper, Vic Mensa. And everybody knows this, knows me and is going to show. I'm not, I don't, to say I don't listen to hip hop or rap would be an understatement. But just a Chicagoan, you know, there's like three rappers that every Chicagoan knows because they're from Chicago. And I'll name them. Here we go. These are three rappers from Chicago
that
every baby boomer knows. Okay. So, oh my God, I could do four. So there's Kanye West, Chance, and Chance's brother, Taylor. There's three. Well, I don't know if everybody knows him. I just know him because of Chance rapper. And Common is three. Vic Mensa is four. So there we go. Who got Common out of that one?
I'll give you some credit. That was very good, Ben. So,
yeah, no, but it's a joke. Vic, so every baby boomer could tell you those four rappers. Oh, yeah, I know a lot about rap, Common. I really only know about Common from his acting career. He was in a movie called American Gangster. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Yeah, I saw that one.
And
who's your favorite of that list of the four that you just mentioned, or five you just mentioned? Who's your favorite Chicago rapper?
Well, I have to tell you, I've not listened to put it mildly. I've not listened to a lot of rap in my life, so I couldn't tell you any songs. But I must concede, I must confess, I have a mini infatuation obsession with Kanye West. One time I was in a long car ride with my oldest daughter. We're crossing the country, and she was very generous, very nice. She was putting on old people music for most of the time. But then there was that final stretch of the drive. We had to get through the desert in Nevada. And she goes, Dad, I can't listen to your old music anymore. I got to put on something that really gets me going because I'm driving the car and you're just sitting back. So I said, all right. So she put on Kanye West. I think it was called Dropout, College Dropout, something college like dropout. That. I'm like, well, you know, this isn't bad. But I'm like, oh, yeah. And he had that one song, Everything I Am. No, Everything I'm Not Makes Me Everything. I forget the line, but I was like, oh, my God, it's so deep and heavy. And it's the one, you know, are you a fan of Kanye West?
I am a fan of Kanye a little bit.
Do you know the one where he's like, people talk about me in barbershops, whatever that song. And, he goes, and Common wrote it. He goes, Common made the rap and I put the rhyme. Man, I am screwing this one up. Sorry, Kanye. I humbly apologize. Give me credit, Kanye.
You're good. I thought you were going to go with the Kanye did a cover of the Daft Punk song, Harder, Faster, Stronger. You've heard that.
Boom, boom. I do. Yeah. Boom,
boom. You know that song. You know Daft Punk.
Yeah.
I know you do. Yeah. So check that song out after the show.
Well, no, I see. So at bowling, there's a contingent of guys who love Kanye West. So I hear a lot of Kanye. And that one, the Jay-Z. Anyway, point is. Yeah. And I'm just fascinated with Kanye West's persona. I watched that documentary about Kanye West. So, and then his bizarre dance he did with Donald Trump, where he went in the White House and sat down and he brought Jim Brown with him. And they started talking about Larry Hoover, who's one of the founders of the Gangster Disciples, and how he wants Trump to let him out of prison. I'm like, this is so absurd what I'm watching. It's almost surreal. And who else but Kanye West, would attempt such an endeavor and not Chris be punished by it. Guy's as popular and wealthy as ever. And then I watch his thing with Kim Kardashian. I could talk about Kanye West all day. So, yes, I admit I have a bit of an obsession with Kanye West. And I remember in 2019, when Chance the Rapper got involved in Chicago politics, he dragged Kanye in for like half a second to make an endorsement. And then Kanye just said, this is boring. And I mean, he doesn't live in Chicago anymore, ladies and gentlemen. You realize that, right? He doesn't live in Chicago. Anyway, I know Vic Mensa is another prominent Chicago rapper. So, yes.
Yeah. So, and he's also a former high school student at Whitney Young. I don't know, you're a big high school, Chicago high school guy. You like to know where everybody went.
All right, I'll give you another one. What elementary school did he go to?
Oh.
Hey, man.
You're asking the wrong guy.
He went to Whitney Young, it's true.
Yes.
He played for a group called Kids These Days. He was the lead singer for Kids These Days. And Kids These Days had a guitar player named Liam, whose dad is Peter Cunningham, who's a regular on this show, PC, I see you. I believe Vic Mensa went to Little Lincoln, which is a Lincoln Elementary School in the north side of Chicago, and his basketball team played against the team I coach, so that's how I know that.
Well, he's come a long way from Lincoln Elementary School, Ben. He's got a new line of cannabis coming out in Chicago called 93 Boys. 93 Boys is Chicago's first black-owned cannabis brand and is the first to pair top-shelf genetics with a core mission focused on giving back to the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me say this about that. Welcome to the game, Vic Mensa. I'm happy that there's now one black-owned cannabis firm here in the state of Illinois. As everybody knows, listen to this show. We were pounding this drum for months. I mean, it's hard not to be completely cynical and jaded about just the way reefer is used in politics, how it's been used pretty much this entire century. My entire lifetime, but let's just talk about this century, which is now 22 years old. When this century was ushered in, and Vic Mensa would have been like, what, 7 years old? Okay, so think about that. Reefer, marijuana, whatever you want to call it, cannabis was very much illegal. And yet everybody did it. It's one of the great hypocrisies in our country. Pretty much everyone I know, and I'm talking about white people now, smoke reefer, or they had smoked it, or they've been in rooms where other people were smoking it. And yet, officially, they had to pretend as though they never did it or never would do it because they're law-abiding citizens. They were giving people drug tests to get a job at the Chicago Tribune to be a reporter. And you couldn't get the job if you were came up positive with a marijuana test. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? What does marijuana intake have to do with your ability to write a story? Yeah. And by the way, you're not even high when you go to work. You could have smoked it the night before. You're sobered up and you go to work, but it's still in your system. Makes no freaking sense. Okay, I could see. You don't want maybe the pilot of the airplane that's flying you to be high? What do you care if an editor who's copy editing some story is high? But that's that drug war. This like insidious drug war that controlled the mentality of so many people in this country. And law and order was the topic of the land. And folks are like three strikes and you're out. So people are going to jail for many, many years, destroying families, communities, and lives for some stupid hypocritical a ban on marijuana. Again, even though marijuana, they all smoke it or have smoked it or been in a room when someone smoked it. And it was always black people. This is something that Mick Dumpke and I, shout out Mick, when we got on this story, we called it the grass gap. Actually, an editor came up with that. The number of black people arrested for possessing reefer as opposed to the number of white people. Big difference, big gap. Like routinely black people were being arrested for something that white people did all the time. White people did it so much that they thought it was legal. In fact, Chris Shragi, I'm going to tell you this story. I wrote an article denouncing the race gap and said, you know, I was like advocating legalization of marijuana. This is years ago. And a stoner that I know, and I'm not going to name names, okay, who was in the same bowling league, came up to me, very smart guy, and he was high as hell when he came up to me when he said this, because he got high every day. And he goes, I've been reading your articles about legalizing marijuana. And he goes, and in this stage, it was before out and out legalization. So it was, what did they call it? They had some
decriminalization.
Thank you, Chris. Decriminalization. So they were going to ticket you and give you like a $50 ticket, decriminalization. So he goes, and he said this to me, man, it just blew my mind when he said it. And again, he was high at the time. So he was seeing the world in all its dimensions. So he said to me, he goes, I don't know if I'm for decriminalization. And I go, why? He goes, well, I'm white. So right now, marijuana is legal. If you decriminalize it, it won't be legal for me anymore. I'll have to pay a fine. And so it would be worse than what it is now. I'm like, I don't know what to say. For once in my life, to quote Stevie Wonder, I couldn't say anything. I didn't know what to say. I mean, just a blatant privilege in that statement. And his indifference to it and the social cost to everybody else who's getting swept up. I guess I had to thank him for his honesty and then go back to bowling. So that's the attitude. So out of nowhere, it's like a ball rolling down a hill. As it started going, it picked up speed. And Democrats made marijuana legal in this state, and you suddenly turned it over to corporations. You can get licenses, you could sell it, you have dispensaries. I was urging, I'm like, okay, black people have taken the hardest hit for this war on drugs for 20 years. Let's put black people at the front of the line to get these licenses. Let's put them up right front. Let's, for once, make it an advantage in this country to be black in terms of the law, in terms of the government, in terms of police. But somehow or other, Chris, we've been legal now for, 2 years? Yeah. And so these mega corporations get the license, got the dispensaries, got the grow houses. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? So Vic Mensa, God bless you. Good luck. I hope you make even more money than you already made. I hope you use it to set up black owned dispensaries throughout the city. So, you know, spread the wealth. And that's my attitude about this.
Now, here's my $1 million question, though, for you, Ben. It's for the community. It's been like 40 years since you've, 30 years plus since you've, what do they say, passed the Ducci. Yeah. So would you, since it's for the community and it's putting money back into what you were just talking about, into fixing this problem, would you take a toke?
Oh, okay.
It's cannabis for a cause.
Okay, so would I buy Vic Mensa's brand? Yes. Yeah. But here's the question I have for you. So, folks, I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. So at some point in Chris's career, he had a gig working. I just learned this. I think it was yesterday, Chris, you revealed this to me. Working at a dispensary, I think in downstate.
Yeah, downstate.
Outside of St. Louis somewhere. Yeah. Okay. I had a like, wow, I did not know that. And so I suddenly was filled with questions. I go, what did you do? And he was, one of the things he did would be a salesman. All right. And that's when Chris revealed to me the discrepancy. Once again, the salesman made very little money compared to the amount of money coming in. So there was like a scam going there. I think it was like, you told me $15 an hour. Is that correct, Chris?
Right around there. I mean, they pay you just like any, most jobs now are at about that $15 an hour wage. That's kind of what you have to pay people to show up anymore. Unfortunately, that's with COVID and everybody being able to work from home. That's the way that went. But you're right. There's still a very, very corporate side of it. It's not like a grassroots movement of small mom and pop, black owned and other minority owned businesses. It's big money that's running.
All right. So I'm not giving away any secrets. Chris and Dennis are old friends. They're good. And they very much come out of the marijuana culture. Right? Let's just put it that way. So when you were working for, and we're not naming any names.
No.
Okay. So when you were working for this corporate entity that ran this legal marijuana dispensary, did it have anything remotely resembling the marijuana culture that drew you and Dennis to reefer way back when?
When you talk about like a night and day situation from when you first, you're a teenager or a college student just out there. It's the early 2000s. Your experience is usually you go over to some guy's house. It's kind of like everything's a bit disheveled. He offers you some cheesy puffs and then asks you what you're looking for. It's very different. Now it's like going into an Apple store. I mean, essentially the biggest thing that was unique to me that I didn't expect was how many people like your age and even older that would come in with no experience with cannabis, and they would just be like, "Hey, where do I start? What do I do? I don't know what I'm supposed to get. Do I need this? Do I need that?" And then you just kind of, that's the best part about that type of a job, is if you are experienced in it and you know what the different products are, you can really kind of make sure people have a good experience and not a bad one. Because I think you've even mentioned to me, Ben, you've had a bad experience or two. Not bad, but not great experience with cannabis and life.
Well, I was a big heavy reefer smoker in the 70s, and then as we kicked into the 80s, in fact, if you went to college with me, you would go, "Oh, that's that pothead." That's kind of what I was, and I loved the culture of marijuana, etc., and so forth. I love like Cheech and Chong and Grateful Dead songs, Reaper High, Marvin Gaye. The What's Going On opens up with a party. Everyone's clearly stoned, so you know, I'm really into the culture of marijuana. And then it just—I don't know, man. It was just like I was like Larry David in that episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where he smokes the reefer and he gets really paranoid. And I was like, "Oh God, it's just like, I'm worthless. I don't do anything. All I do is smoke reefer." So I just quit because it made me so paranoid. So I'm out. That was 40 years ago since I last smoked. Okay. But now everybody who smokes goes, "You know, Ben," and it is the analogy you gave to a baby boomer buying a computer is hilarious. When they go to an Apple store and they go, "Well, let me help you, sir," and they, you know, they like reduce it to the basics because they think you're an idiot. But a lot of boomer. We did that show, The Cannabis Conversation. Lisa Salomon would come on, and all these different marijuana operators would say, "Ben, I got some stuff that I'm gonna get it to you. It won't make you paranoid. It's a special strain that doesn't make you paranoid." I'm like, who would want the strain that makes you paranoid? I'm like, wait a minute. Is there a strain that makes you paranoid? Why would anybody want that?
Yeah,
that was my first question. But they assure me there's a special strain that won't make you paranoid. Now, you sold the stuff, literally,
legally
at a store.
Legally.
Legally. So is there a rap that you have for someone like me? "Oh, Ben, this is the strain for you, not paranoid strain." Is there such a thing that's actual?
I mean, here's the thing. It's really complex, and we could spend an entire show just talking about the science of cannabis and what makes people have different reactions. So a lot of people, it really depends on your mind too as well. Like some people have an ADHD type mindset. So it's just the way their brain works. And chemically, if you smoke certain types of cannabis, that will make you more energetic, whereas most people that would make very sleepy. So there's so many different things, and there's so many different elements in the cannabis plant that it really is kind of like, I don't want to compare it to when you're at the doctor and they're trying different medications, but realistically, you have to kind of figure out which ones work best for you because there's not enough science behind it to tell you, these terpenes, which are basically the flavors, are going to have as much of an effect as the THC that's getting you high. There's all kinds of different parts of the plant, so it's so complex that I just say it's really interesting to try, even if you don't want to try it. Like, you don't have to try it. You can just learn about the stuff. Smoking pot's not for everybody. I don't think it's something should be for everybody. But it's one of those things where the more you learn about it, especially if all the experience you had was 20 or 30 years ago, it's night and day as to what the cannabis industry is now. So And it's getting better. So as far as finding you a non-paranoid strain, Ben, I'm sure we can do. I'll bet Vic's got a strain.
All right, Vic. If I'm going to go out and buy one, I'll buy Vic Mensa's support. Vic Mensa, proud graduate of Lincoln Elementary School, proud graduate of Whitney Young High School, Chicago's own Vic Mensa, and the first and only, as far as I know, Black-owned Illinois marijuana producing company. So good for you, Vic Mensa. So I go, if I'm gonna, I'll have someone, I won't name names, take me there to buy it, and they'll know what they're talking about.
You don't even have to say you know a guy anymore. You can just Google it, like, "Where do I find cannabis near me?" And it'll be like, "Ah, cool." You used to have to be like, "Hey man, can you talk to your buddy for me?"
Like, you know what, I still have it. Like, old habits are hard to break. and this is the point that I began, and I'll end with it, that back in the start of the century, we all had to pretend like we didn't know anything about it. So we'd be watching a TV show, and all the characters in the TV show or movie, and all the characters in the movie would be smoking up, lighting up, and we'd be laughing at it, you know. But then when we got to work and dealt with people in the official world, we had to pretend as though we knew nothing about it. And then all, like, if you had a breakthrough, then you could, like, have a real conversation with a fellow worker, or, you know, hey, let's go. You know what I mean? You have your little secret. Yeah. It was like such a strange, bizarre way of dealing with the world. And it's just kind of like, I could make a political metaphor, if you will, the powerlessness of people, how we go along with the official laws and rules in our country, breaking them quietly on the side, you know, knowing, well, I'll never get busted for this, and not really caring if some black guy got busted for it because it doesn't affect you. So that's kind of like the contradiction of marijuana. And I still have it in my head. So like I say, wow, I know people. I think I know a whole bunch of people who could take me and lead me through, but I want to name them. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not like if I go, oh, I want to buy a really good bottle of whiskey, you know? Yeah. So, hey, Dennis, I will say openly, come help me. Well, Dennis, I don't know if he knows anything about whiskey, but I would, if he did, I go, come on, help me. You know, we would not be shy about promoting that. But still, that bias against reefer, you know what I mean? It's like in there. It's like,
And when you really think about it, when you were just talking about coming full circle, think about who limited the ability for cannabis to be legal. Think about the president who left office and was very disgraced when he left. What was his name?
Richard Nixon.
Richard Nixon. That's right. So Richard Nixon puts this in place. And for the last 50, 60 years, we've all been just kind of like living in this world where we have to pretend that it doesn't exist, or that we don't know people that do it, or that we don't do it. And I'm glad that that's starting to change. But it's like you said in the beginning of this, it's got to change more so for the people that have been most affected by it. It can't just change for the Chris's of the world that occasionally toke up and never really had a major problem with police from it. There's people that literally get thrown in jail for a joint, and that's
very good.
Disgusting.
Well put, and I love the word, how he inserted the word occasionally into that sentence. very well done, Chris. All right. By the way, very well done all week. Chris Schrage, let's give the studio applause for a great job sitting in for a man who really does his job well, the Dr. D, who's taking a week off. I will be taking next week off, a much deserved vacation. Thank you, listeners, for saying that and agreeing with that. But we have plenty of shows that we record, pre-recorded, and we'll be dropping them throughout the week, along with some classics from the past. And I'll return. What date would that be? Let's see. I'm going to look up August 23rd, I want to say. And I've already booked that show, that guest. John Nichols. Happy to say this, John Nichols, veteran political reporter, lefty for The Nation, based in Wisconsin, really knows his politics. Shout out to Frank for helping connect us. He will be our first guest when we come back from our vacation. So I'm going to enjoy it. I'll be really mellowed out, reefer, without even reefer, just chilling and not talking every day for hours will mellow me out. So, Chris, thank you very much for doing an outstanding job. Sitting in for the great Dr. D. And I'll close by saying to you what I always say to Dr. D. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, you can download previous Ben Jarofsky shows, Benny J. bonus interviews, and so much more at ChicagoReader.com or wherever else you download your favorite podcasts.